Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Bump in the Night by Stella. My best friend moved from California to Buffalo, New York, to live with her boyfriend who inherited his late father's condo. She was homesick and invited me and a mutual friend to visit them, and said we could stay in their condo for a couple of weeks while sightseeing in New York and Canada. When we pulled up to the condo, my jaw dropped because it was a huge, red-bricked building with multiple stories, nothing like I had ever seen in California before. It reminded me of the firehouse in the movie Ghostbusters, in a way. We joked because it was so old and big, but it really reminded us of it. A big building, well known in Buffalo, on 800 West Ferry Street. They lived with her boyfriend's brother and a cat on the 7th floor in a 2-bed, 2-bath condo with a balcony. I had the couch in the living room, which was in between her bedroom door and the balcony door. She told us to use the restroom in her bedroom for showering and to remember to keep the bedroom door closed because that was the only room her cat was allowed to roam. This building is very old, and the interior was not modernized. It had big, heavy, wooden doors and wood paneling everywhere, a marble fireplace, and French doors that led to the balcony. The third night there, I awoke. It must have been 2 a.m. Everything was quiet and dark, so I closed my eyes to fall back asleep. Then I heard her bedroom door being pulled open as it made a loud creaking sound. It opened about 10 inches. I was looking at the door, waiting to see who was going to walk out, but no one did. Everyone was still asleep. So I thought nothing of it and was able to doze back asleep. The next morning, I awoke to chatting sounds from the kitchen. I said good morning, and my friend walked into the living room where I was and asked, "Hey, why did you let the cat out? She's not supposed to roam around out here. Because of the wood and furniture, she could ruin it." I said it wasn't me. She said, "Well, someone did because the door was open this morning." I told her what I saw the night before, and that I expected her to walk out, except nobody did. She said there was no way the door would open by itself because it's so heavy. You have to use your body weight to get it open, because it dragged a bit on the carpet. There was no way it would freely swing open. I swore to her that's what I saw happen. She seemed to just stare at me, kind of wanting to say something else, but just chuckled and said, "Okay, whatever." 2 nights later, I awoke in the dawn hours, light just beginning to creep in from the French doors. Everything was quiet. My friend and her boyfriend were still asleep. I closed my eyes to get some more sleep. Then I heard the latch open on the balcony's French doors. I opened my eyes and stared at the doors. They started creaking and slowly opening. They opened about 8 inches and just stopped. It was odd, but I mostly just thought it was an annoying inconvenience, since I was comfy and now had to get up to close the door. The morning chill was suddenly all around me, and my blanket was pretty thin. I got up and closed it, then turned the latch to click into the closed position. I laid back down on the couch and fell asleep, wondering what could have caused that to happen. Later that day, I was showering and thought I better hurry up, in case someone else needs to use the restroom. I turned off the shower and reached for the towel, when I heard what sounded like a male voice outside the door. I didn't make out what was said, but I heard an older person's muffled voice saying something right outside the door. I stopped drying off and loudly said, "Hey, I'm in here." And I paused for a response. "I'm almost done, I'll be right out," I said again with another pause, but heard nothing. I felt a creepy feeling all around me and couldn't get dressed fast enough. I walked out into the bedroom, but no one was there. When I walked out into the living room where everyone was, I asked, "Hey, who was just in there?" They all just looked at one another, then at me, kind of wondering what was the matter. My friend said, "No one. We've all been in here the whole time." I said that someone was just in there and that they talked to me while I was in the shower, but didn't get an answer when I called out. She looked at me and said, with a chuckle, "No one was in there, I swear. Are you going crazy or something?" I sat on the couch, wondering what had just happened, because I swear I heard someone talking to me outside that door. When we got back to California, we were talking on the phone about our trip and adventures, when she said, "I didn't want to tell you anything when you were here so you wouldn't freak out, but people say this place is haunted. My boyfriend's dad died in our bedroom, and there are rumors that someone killed themselves by jumping off our balcony many years ago." I was in shock. I swore I wouldn't ever visit her there again, even though she swore she had never experienced anything the entire time she lived there. Our mutual friend never experienced anything like I did and never felt uncomfortable. Which makes me wonder, why did all of this happen while I was there?
The Pale Lady in the Woods by Spooky Bitch. I live a little ways out in the woods on a small dirt road with a few neighbors who also live on that small street. It's a quiet place. We all know each other and get along decently. Given that we host these little bonfires sometimes and invite the neighbors around to grill and have a few drinks, we often discuss things that we've seen lately in our little patch of the forest. A group of lovely deer, a mischievous raccoon, or the odd wandering bear are all often topics of conversation. However, inevitably, we often end up on the subject of a mutual experience most of us have had with unexplainable phenomena happening around our homes. It's no secret that my woods tend to make people a bit uneasy. It's dark and quiet. This tends to make people tense. I'm not any different.
I don't go outside in the dark if I don't have to, and I get scared at times when an animal makes a ruckus. There are some things, though, I just can't contribute to animals. To start, I have to go all the way back to when I was 13, when I first moved onto this property. I often felt like I was being watched at night. I was terrified to sleep without the lights on. I tried my best to ignore it, but I was honestly terrified to be outside at night or here alone. For my 14th birthday, I decided to face my fears so that I could pitch a tent outside and quote-unquote camp in the yard. I would do this with a few friends. One of them left us in the middle of the night because they were so anxious. Another left in the morning after barely sleeping all night. The last friend stayed a couple of extra days, but was creeped out the entire time. She claimed to have briefly seen the apparition of a pale woman with dark hair standing in our yard and felt something touch her at night. She was truly terrified, and I could tell. When I tapped on her shoulder, she startled very easily. She almost hit me out of fright. This was very abnormal for her. I spoke to my uncle who lives next door about the woman that she saw, and to my surprise, he claimed to have seen the same apparition. He said he saw it multiple times. He wasn't even surprised when we brought it up. I moved out not long after this, but recently moved back. Since returning as an adult, I've heard several stories from my family and neighbors about weird phenomena like this. My uncle has seen the lady, but also shadow figures, and has heard some unnatural noises coming from the woods at night. As a man who has lived out there for over 40 years, he's very familiar with the usual sounds that animals and nature make, and he didn't think any of these sounds were natural. His wife has also seen shadow figures and weird masses of black energy. She claimed to have been pushed over by an unseen force after witnessing one of these black masses of energy. She hasn't gone outside at night since. My grandmother claimed to have been chased by a shadow entity several years ago on this property while walking back from my uncle's. I stopped at her front door and I watched while she cried and called my aunt and uncle for help. Understandably, they said no and told her to light some sage. A couple of neighbors have claimed to have seen similar shadow figures, as well as the apparition of the lady on occasion. I still feel watched, and I regularly cleanse my house to keep whatever is out there as far from my home as possible. A good friend of mine, when I first moved back in, called me with concerns over a dream that she had. This was before she had ever seen or set foot on my property. She described my house and property perfectly and described seeing the same pale woman that multiple people have now seen. I was understandably shaken considering she hadn't been to my home at the time and hadn't really discussed the weird happenings with her. She spent the night one time and refuses to do it again. My street is very creepy, but I have come to accept that something more is here. With all of these shared experiences, I can't deny that something is out there. It's been a long time, and it seems to make itself known to anyone who spends enough time here.
Alyssa's Tragedy by Jess. I wanted to tell my story because I feel like it's just something I should get off my chest. My name is Jess. I'm a woman who has strong spiritual beliefs. Growing up, my father was an atheist and my mother was spiritual. Both parents were extremists when it came to their beliefs, although not forceful with their opinions. Because of this, I ended up in a gray area. I believe in the transference of energy, both while living and after death. I should preface this by saying, yes, I believe in ghosts, positive energies, and negative energies. But I also have to have solid reason behind what I believe in. What I believe has to be evidence-based, based on what I've seen or is proven. But I digress. One summer, I was traveling home to Ontario, Canada. At the time, I lived in Alberta. My spouse and I stayed in a hotel that was close to the beach, and behind the hotel, there were old train tracks. On the second night of our stay, we were spending some quality time together, and we were up late. It was about midnight, and I decided to jump in my Jeep to go get us some burgers. I told my spouse he could stay in the room, as he did all the driving across the country, and he was still exhausted. I made my way out to the back parking lot, hopped in my Jeep, and began pulling out. This particular hotel has a huge field to the left of it, and it's not located directly in the city. And being that there was no one around, I started to speed out of the parking lot. When I rounded the corner, a woman appeared out of nowhere. She walked off the sidewalk that was at the front of the hotel and crossed the pavement in front of my Jeep. I hit my brakes and was very annoyed. I stared at her and she looked vacant and in shock. I wanted to yell at her because of the basic fear that I thought I would run her over. Something in me knew, though, that she was among the non-living. My immediate response was logic. I looked to the left, wondering why she was traveling towards the field that leads to nowhere, then looked to the right, looking for anyone else that might be trailing behind her. But when I looked back in her direction, she was gone. There was nowhere she could have hid out of sight so suddenly. Now the crazy part. The way this woman moved was seamless, like she wasn't using her legs, just gliding. She wasn't completely solid either. She was like a very dense fog with smooth skin. Not completely transparent, though, and consumed by tragedy. I could feel it emanating from her. I heard the name Alyssa in my head, and I knew this was the woman who was murdered when I was a kid. I also remember asking myself if that was a woman or a man, as my brain tried to process what I saw, but failed to do so. She was dressed shabbily. She wore a gray, oversized zip-up hoodie, black pants, and her hair was shaggy and shoulder length. But again, I knew with every fiber of my being that this was Alyssa. Since I was a child when she was murdered, I knew nothing about her. Nothing about her appearance, her age, not even her last name. I just kept trying to shake off this feeling of terror that overlapped all logical explanations. I've seen spirits before, and ghosts. My whole life, actually. But I'm very good at blocking it out. They seem to show up when I'm relaxed, open, and least suspecting it. I always gaslit myself, and convince myself it isn't real. And just a manifestation of my imagination. But her, Alyssa, she did not allow this. She needed to be seen. She needed me to know she was lost, confused, sad, and in shock. I still left and got food. I couldn't shake the thought of her, though. When I returned, I parked, and I could see her in my mind's eye, standing beside my driver's side window, just glaring at me. I can't tell you how long I was paralyzed in fear, waiting for her to leave me alone. I begged her to go away, repeating, "Please go away. You're not real. This isn't real." When I finally mustered the nerve, I ran inside and immediately called my mother. We three-way called my sister to dissect what happened. My mom convinced me it must have been someone else's spirit, because from what she remembered, Alyssa was a blonde woman. She also said to me, "Sensitive people are like lighthouses to lost spirits, Jess. You have to manage it. Don't be scared." My mother and sister also did some digging and found some articles about Alyssa. My sister found an article that shook me to my core. The night Alyssa went missing, she was wearing a gray zip-up hoodie, black pants, and she had shaggy, shoulder-length brown hair. She then proceeded to share Alyssa's photo with us in our group message, and I felt the color drain from my face. It was her, undeniably her. It turns out she was murdered by someone she thought was her friend. He led her out to the train tracks, and I'll spare the gruesome details here. My mother insisted I go out the next day and tell Alyssa what happened to her, as my mother thought she must not know she's dead. She was intoxicated and unconscious when she was murdered, so I agreed. I walked outside, terrified even in the light of day, and tried to call out to Alyssa. I did see her in my mind's eye again. I told her that her daughters were safe and living with her parents. I told her she was a victim of a horrendous crime, but the man who did this was brought to justice, and that she was able to move on. I could see her in my mind, standing behind me, shaking her head no, in denial. There was so much sadness that washed over me that it brought me to tears. So, Alyssa, I wish you nothing but love and light. For the sake of you moving on, let's never meet again.
One Off Loss of Time by Pieces of Blue Cheese. I've had an odd experience that has lingered with me for a while. I can't seem to make sense of it, but I've come to accept that I might never understand what happened. It was a normal day off at home. I had recently bought my house about 3 months prior and was still getting accustomed to it. I sat down on my sectional in the living room and watched TV. I had just made some clam chowder and placed it right in front of me while I turned on South Park, my go-to comfort show. This was around noon on a bright day with sunlight filtering through the blinds. Next, something happened that still gives me goosebumps. I can't really recall what occurred next, but suddenly it was 7:42 p.m., as if time had leaped forward without me. South Park was still playing, far from the episode I had started with, and my food was untouched, exactly where I left it. However, I found myself lying down on the couch in front of the fireplace, a spot that I would never lie down in, typically just used for sitting to tie my shoes before heading out or something like that. I can't fully explain the feeling, but I was overwhelmed with an intense, raw fear from not knowing where the time went or what happened. There were no clues, no pieces to piece together, and beyond that, I felt somewhat sick and had an out-of-body sensation which I attributed to how agitated I had become. This had never happened to me before and hasn't since. There's no history of anything like this in my family. I'm truly at a loss about this one. To calm myself, I reheated my clam chowder and ate it. Now I'm sure you have some questions. Yes, I installed a carbon monoxide detector shortly after buying the house, so it definitely wasn't carbon monoxide poisoning. When I quote-unquote woke up, besides the overall sensation, there were marks on my foot resembling those of being tied up with wire thread, but these marks faded the next day. There is no history of epilepsy or blackouts in my family. Following this episode, I experienced shivers down my spine, not painful but random moments when the center of my spine would feel cold, sending chills up and down my back. This sensation still occurs, but much less frequently than right after the incident. I had missed calls and texts, but I hadn't contacted anyone during my unaccounted time. Lastly, that couch is extremely uncomfortable. I do not like it. We mainly just place things on it. I have a fantastic sectional that I adore. I have no idea why I would end up waking up on the uncomfortable couch. I wouldn't choose to do that. Not even letting a puppy sleep on it.
Another Man's Soul Entered My Dad's Body by Nick. For context, I am Slovakian and Vietnamese. My father is Vietnamese but lived in Slovakia for many years and is able to speak the language. My parents divorced and my dad moved away to Germany. One day, my dad went to visit his friends, a married couple, somewhere in Germany, and he stayed at their house overnight. Later in the evening, my sister got a phone call from my dad, and he was crying in a complete panic. This was so unusual, as our dad never cried in front of us. He's a very chill and positive person who never expressed any sort of sadness or negativity. My sister was in total shock. Moreover, she couldn't understand a word he was saying, as he was speaking to her in Vietnamese. It seemed as if he forgot to speak in Slovak. My sister tried to talk to him in Slovak to find out what was going on. Mind you, my sister and I don't speak Vietnamese, so she couldn't make out what he was saying. My sister was really freaked out at this point, so she called our aunt, who also lives in Slovakia and can speak Vietnamese. My sister explained the situation to her. My aunt has a thing for the spirit world, but more on that a bit later. Anyways, my aunt quickly called my dad to find out what was happening. After translating what my dad was saying, she told us he said something along the lines of, "Where am I? Where are my parents? I just want to talk to my parents." My aunt knew the people my dad was visiting that day, as they were all part of a close-knit Vietnamese community in the area. She quickly called the woman my dad was staying with. Well, as it turns out, she and her husband lost their son some time ago. We believe that her son's soul had entered my dad's body and demanded to talk to his parents. The woman talked to her son through my dad and told him that everything is well and he should leave my dad's body. It lasted for about 15 minutes. My dad was so confused once it was over and didn't remember much of it at all. It was an emotional experience for everybody. Remember how I said that my aunt has a thing for the spirit world? She experienced something very similar years prior to this when a friend came over to visit her. All of a sudden, Her friend felt like she was going to faint. Then she started talking as if she were a completely different person. She kept repeating, "Why didn't you want me? Why did you get rid of me?" When she eventually regained her senses, my aunt told her what happened. Her friend then broke down and told her that she had an abortion, which may explain what happened. My Vietnamese family members are all Buddhists and believe in reincarnation. We believe these spirits may have temporarily reincarnated through my father and my aunt's friend. Luckily, my family hasn't experienced anything else like this. Let's hope it stays that way.
Ghosts of My Parents' Home by Arakuda. Before I share these stories, I want to provide some context. I have a certain sensitivity. I can sense when things feel off or just not right. I've encountered many strange occurrences, but I'll discuss a few from my parents' previous home. The earliest experience dates back to when I was around 5 or 6, but that's a tale for another time. In 2019, a year before the pandemic began, we moved into my parents' most recent home. I've always believed in ghosts, so when we first stepped in and visited the basement during a tour, I immediately felt this not-for-me vibe, especially upon seeing the large metal table in the center of a stone floor. As we went upstairs, I heard footsteps behind me, but I didn't pay them any mind. I was tired from dealing with paranormal activity from the last house. Months passed with very little happening until about 6 months before I started dating my current wife. I heard a quiet sob from downstairs. Confidently, I asked, "Are you okay?" but received no response. I called out to my mom and sister, thinking that they might have stayed behind, but they didn't answer. So I did the next rational thing. I put my shoes on and left the house. I called my mom to ask if she or my sister were still at my grandmother's. She confirmed that they had both been there for most of the morning. When I mentioned the crying, she suggested that it might have been someone from outside, but I knew something was off. A few months later, after I moved out, my mom finally disclosed all of the things that happened to everyone since I had left. It started with a glowing light shining in my brother's window, which is a good 15 feet off of the ground, and a tall shadow peeking into my sister's room. Then, it was a little girl who would whisper "Mommy" in my mom's ear in the morning. She also saw a small child in a white dress. She was open to letting the girl stay as long as she wasn't harmful, but I felt otherwise. I got my hands on some sage and rosemary, and I told her to sage every corner with every door and open window. After bringing this stuff to her, the activity slowed. Fast forward a few weeks, she texted me saying, "The tall man was in my room. Your dad chased him out, thinking that it was somebody breaking in. But when he got around the corner, they were gone." Around the middle of last year, you could hear people walking upstairs and clicking keyboards in my brother's room, but the tall man never entered any rooms. Now to the present. I'm watching the house and staying the night to watch their dogs. The activity has been on the mild side with no major happenings until this morning. I heard my little girl make a sound as if she wanted to get up or get comfortable. I rolled over in bed and I heard her giggling downstairs with her favorite show on. I went back to sleep, assuming that it was in my head. When I got up later, I made it clear that the spirits could not mess with me, my wife, or my little girl. Immediately, the pans hanging from the shelf in the kitchen began swaying slightly. I checked the door to the basement and the vents nearby. The air was off and there was no draft. As I made my way to the stairs, I saw a young child's head quickly dart into the room that I had slept in. When I got upstairs, I heard breathing behind me when I asked if it preferred not to be acknowledged. I left for the day and left all of the lights off except for the living room. When I got home after work, I saw that the light in the kitchen was on. I remembered turning it off because I grabbed my cat, set her outside while I was gone, and turned back to shut it off. But now it was on. So I called my wife and told her, "Somebody is here or the ghosts are trying to mess with me." She listened as I moved through the house and checked for intruders until I got to my mom and dad's room, where the air felt sickeningly heavy. I grabbed my suitcase, started back down the stairs, and left after turning off every light this time. When I got downstairs into the car, I felt sick, like an extremely nervous kind of sick, and I told my wife I would not be staying overnight without everyone else being home.
I don't have a whole lot to add about Stella's story, the first one in this episode, other than it was kind of rude of her friend to gaslight her about the haunted activity, in my opinion.
I know. Yeah, definitely. I mean, what friend not only doesn't share that sort of information, but then straight up calls you crazy for saying that you experienced something?
Yeah, see, I don't blame Stella for saying that she won't be going back. You gotta downgrade that friend to Sunday brunch.
Yeah, at the most.
So these pale lady and white apparitions seem to be really common.
Yeah.
Not only on the stories that we feature on the show, but they're such a staple in popular culture, whether that be in movies, books, or historical sightings, wherever. That's what popular culture is, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It always seems to be such an emotionally charged ghost too. Sometimes they're like extremely angry and sometimes they're extremely sad.
Yeah, and in a lot of the stories or folklore, they tend to be victims of tragedy, a common pattern I've noticed.
Yeah, totally. I did some reading on this specific kind of spirit and it's so insanely popular throughout history and almost always has some kind of tragic tale behind it.
Yeah.
I was going to try and cover all of them here on the show, but there's just too many. And I mean from everywhere in the world, Russia, Philippines, Japan, you name it. They've all got tales of this pale lady in white. I've even had a story of a lady in white on Let's Not Meet.
Oh, so you're doing supernatural stories on your other podcast now, huh? Trying to bogart odd trails and push me out? Well, guess what? You can't fire me. I quit.
Yeah, bud, you're done. You didn't follow proto.
At least let me finish this episode. And by the way, that was a missed opportunity for a poorly executed April Fool's joke in our last episode.
Oof, yeah, we'll never recover from that. But yeah, it's not technically a supernatural story. At least nothing supernatural actually happens in the story.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so in that one, the author and his friend were visiting the friend's family cabin and they decided to hit up a casino on a Native American reserve nearby. So they win some cash and they're heading back to the cabin really late that same night. And about halfway to the cabin, they saw these two green orbs just off the highway and slammed on their brakes. And they realized that the orbs were the eyes of a deer reflecting in the light.
Okay.
And so they basically wait there while several deer cross the road, and then they get back on their way. When they made it to the top of this hill and rolled to a stop, the friends screamed, "Holy shit!" And right in front of them was this young woman in the middle of the road, and she was wearing a white nightgown, had pitch black hair, and no shoes on.
Yeah, no thanks. Nope.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So she's walking in their direction with this blank expression on her face.
Ugh, yeah, that's a trope that'll never fail to freak me out. They did that in American Crime, that weird dramatization of Sylvia Likens' murder with Elliot Page. You seen that one?
Yeah, that one was brutal. I'm officially traumatized from watching that.
Yeah, the actual, like, court documents and everything else. I don't want to get into it, but yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, well, in this story, they wait to see if she's going to come up to the window to ask for help. Instead, though, she just slowly walks by the car and drags her hand across the side as she passes and continues this creepy zombie walk.
Mm.
Now, they look in the rearview mirror because they didn't feel right about just leaving her behind in that state. Yes, it's creepy, but also it's a young woman in the street alone out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So the author puts on his blinkers, gets out, and then walks to the back of the car. And it was so dark that he could barely see her at this point as she keeps fading in and out of view. He yelled out, asking if she was all right. And she finally stopped, but she just stays facing away from him. She's not saying anything in response. Then the friend opens the door to join him outside when suddenly the woman starts screaming her head off, mm-hmm. like screeching. And the guys jump back in the car and peel out of there. And they just basically sped all the way back to the cabin.
Yeah, that's scary. I've just got to add that even if it is like somebody in distress all by themselves, super common hijacking technique. So just find somewhere safe and call the cops or emergency services that may pertain to the situation at hand.
Yeah, and not to sound like a broken record, but that's also something that shows up on Let's Not Meet all the time. People trying to trap you by pretending to be helpless on the side of the road, and then they drive off and some dudes jump out of the bushes like they were waiting, you know, for you to open the door and let the woman in distress in.
Yeah, tried and true technique.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll eventually start my own solo podcast and I can find an angle and talk about my show too. We'll see. But yeah, that's a cool story, even though it's not quite supernatural. And it's neat because you can tell that story on either podcast and it totally work, just depending on your frame of reference, if you're expecting something paranormal or not.
Yeah, it's definitely a gray area story. I like those.
Yeah, I've always liked those kind of stories, sort of like in The Shining. Was it really a haunted hotel, or was Jack responsible for going insane, hurting Danny and trying to kill the family?
Yeah, totally. I think that the only part in that entire movie where there's no other explanation, you know, other than the paranormal, is when Jack gets let out of the storage room. He's clearly locked in, but someone or something lets him out.
Yeah, even Kubrick stated in interviews that Danny's imaginary friend wasn't some kind of spirit or ghost. It was just a plain old imaginary friend.
Yeah.
He was basically abused by his father and manages this trauma by creating Tony, and it helps him rationalize his visions.
Yeah, I don't think there's any kind of quote from Kubrick stating that there were any ghosts in the movie. And there's this really cool theory that a ghost didn't even let him out of the storage room.
Oh, so what's the leading theory there?
Well, Danny isn't even seen throughout that whole segment with Wendy leading up to it.
Oh, so Danny let him out, that little bugger.
Yeah, that's the idea. He basically was still in denial of being attacked by Jack, and his dad basically sweet talks him into opening the door.
That makes sense. Yeah, I love all the different theories about that movie. All the movies I like the most are ones that have some sort of open-ended stuff left to interpretation.
Yeah.
And no, I won't mention the movie that rhymes with embarrassing micro.
That's too soon.
Yeah.
We said we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. Let's see. Okay. What was up with Nick's story with those possessions or whatever?
Yeah. See, okay. My knowledge of reincarnation as it pertains to Buddhism is admittedly pretty surface level, but
same.
I thought when you're reborn, like until it's your time to go again and the cycle continues.
Mm.
I never imagined that a reincarnated spirit could temporarily house itself within an existing form of consciousness, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just because it doesn't really give karma a fair shake.
Right. Maybe they could have gotten caught up in some weird state of purgatory until their spirits found their next life. I don't know. You know, not in the literal Catholic sense, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, yeah, I got you. I wouldn't be surprised if it even wasn't reincarnation, all due respect to the author, but maybe they really were just momentary possessions where her dad and her aunt's friend had some windows open, so to speak, that the spirits were able to crawl through.
Who's to say? Either way, the things that they were saying seemed too specific to be some weird coincidence or any sort of mental breakdown, in my opinion.
I definitely agree.
Yeah.
There was some actual metaphysical element to it all.
Yeah, yeah.
So that story about Alyssa that Jess shared was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to sound condescending, it just sounded that way.
No, I get it.
When I said that I'll spare the gruesome details, that was actually me saying that Jess did not spare the details,
but
I appreciate being informed all the same. I just figured it'd be best not to plant any specific images in people's heads on their morning commute and ruin the rest of their day.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, hauntings are one thing, but some of the quote-unquote real-world stuff is better off being left out, in my opinion, at least in some cases.
Yeah.
I don't want to give these people those kinds of nightmares. That's not really our brand.
Exactly. There are other platforms better suited for that. But the fact Alyssa's spirit revealed herself to the author did remind me of another really sad murder case that was featured on here. Back in episode 77, I had to really dig through the archives to find that one.
Yeah.
The story about Sophie Sergi, the Alaskan Native student who was murdered on her college campus.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I went on a deep dive about Sophie's case after that.
Yeah, I think most of us did. That was really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But to shift things in a more optimistic light, I think between those two stories, and really a lot of the stories we feature on here, it at least gives us a glimmer of hope that there's a chance of redemption and peace for when we all die, however it might happen.
Yeah, that's true. And even though the spiritual activity that we hear about seems to involve people who had ultimately... Even though the spiritual activity that we hear about seems to involve people who had untimely or unpleasant deaths, it could at least mean it doesn't just stop there. You know what I mean?
Right. If we have some unfinished business when we go out, maybe we'll just get to close the loop or something and then cross over to a place where everything is just perfect.
I really hope so. The idea of being dead forever creeps me out.
Same. I used to obsess about it way too much as a kid.
Me too.
Even through the context of imagining life before we were born and life after death being no different, it's still not a pleasant pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
But all we can really do is live in the moment and hope for the best.
Yep, stressing will not help.
Hey, Epictetus would be proud.
Yeah. Well, thanks everybody so much for listening. We appreciate every single one of you, especially the patrons. Listen, if you want to get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate and support the show to keep us going, head over to patreon.com/oddtrails to sign up today. And don't forget to send in your stories to stories@oddtrails if you want to hear them on the podcast. All of the stories you've heard this week were narrated and produced with the permission of their respective authors. Finally, make sure you check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet, a True Horror Podcast, and the Old Time Radio Cast at crypticcountypodcasts.com. I guess that's it. We'll see you guys next week. Everyone, stay safe.
Peace out.
The ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.